all of his brothers and sisters, all of them, either live in Lakewood or Yerushalayim. They all learn in Kollel. He, as a youngster, found the whole lifestyle very stifling. The whole thing with the black and white and wearing a hat all the time, he found it very, very stifling. So he rebelled. He was the absolute rebel in his family, and he didn't rebel in a small way. You know, he rebelled big. What do I mean by rebelled big? He ended up in the Far East worshiping Avodah Zarah. He rebelled big. And, you know, doing all kinds of drugs, all sorts of things. Ultimately, his grandfather, who was one of the Gedolei Hadar, is the one that drew him close, had a chavrusa with him every day. They never learned any Torah. He was just schmoozing with him every single day, over and over again, until he got him back to a good place. And this fellow, we'll call him Binyamin, and I'm going to call him that because that's his name. This fellow, Binyamin, became a modern Orthodox Jew, like a really good modern Orthodox Jew. And he davens in my shul, which I think is a really good shul. And he comes to Minyan. I don't know if he does three times a day Minyan, but he comes to Minyan, usually. He learns daily, learns Torah daily. But, you know, like on Sundays, he wears jeans and a t-shirt. He doesn't wear black and white with the hat. Good. So that's a success, right? That's a win. His mother got very, very sick. And he was trying to take care of her as best he can. She was dying. There was no refuah for what she had. And she calls him over one day and says, Binyamin, I have one request of you. And he says, yeah, Mom, anything. And she says, well, pretty soon I'm not going to be here anymore. And you're going to be saying Kaddish for me. I want that when you say Kaddish, you should wear a black hat when you say Kaddish. That was her dying request. That he wear. Now, he would have done anything for his mother. But that, to him, was like a symbol of everything that went wrong in his life. Meaning he found that request to be so challenging that he actually came and asked, do I have to listen to my mother's dying request? So we have two shaitas here. We have the sushi question, and we have the mother's dying request question. Any preference amongst which one is more interesting? You like another one better? Anyone want to second that? Or no one cares. Okay, good. So we'll do the mother one. So what's the issue? Where do I open up a book? Like, what book do I open up? Where do I open up a Shulchan Aruch to find what the answer is to the mother question? Like, what's the issue? What halach? This is not Hilchos Shabbos, right? It's not Hilchos Kashrus. What is this? Hilchos? Don't be afraid. You all know it. What is it? Don't whisper it to Zechariah. Don't. You don't know. This is Hilchos. Keep it avein. Right? Do you have to listen to a parent? Now, why wouldn't you? Is there any reason, just, you know, without learning any Torah, without knowing anything, by a show of hands, how many of you think he's obligated to say Kaddish wearing a black hat? How many of you believe he's not obligated to say Kaddish wearing a black hat? And the rest of you don't have a vote. So most of you think he's not obligated. Most of you think he's not obligated to wear a black hat. But wait, do you agree that there are 10 commandments? Yeah? Not 9, right? You agree there are 10. And you agree that one of those 10 commandments is Kaved es avicha v'asimecha. You have to honor your father and mother, right? So how do we get from that, if that's the starting point, that you need to honor your father and mother, how do we get from that to what I believe is the correct conclusion that most of you drew, that he probably does not have to wear the black hat? How do we get from there to there? So first thing we have to ask ourselves is, what exactly does Kibud Av V'Aim require of a person? Can a parent ask anything? Can a parent, anything? Just change your whole life? So I'll tell you a story. As I mentioned, I taught in DRS High School for many years. I had a student once who was in 12th grade. His father, the father of this student, we'll call the student David again because that's his name. His father had Alzheimer's disease. Are anyone familiar with Alzheimer's disease? It's a terrible thing. Usually the father of high school students is not suffering from Alzheimer's. It's usually something that comes much later in life. But he was what they call a ben zekunim. His parents were a little bit older. His father was suffering from Alzheimer's. His father no longer recognized him. And he was the last child living at home with his parents. And his father was still in the house, but had 24-hour care. And the student came over to me, and he said that he wasn't sure whether he should go to Israel for the year after high school and leave his mom all alone with that kind of situation in the house. Now, this is a kid that, you know, for not going to get into the value of the year of Israel for different types of kids, but for this kid, there's no doubt that it had extraordinary value. He would have ended up somewhere, he would have ended up in a very, very different place religiously and emotionally without going to Israel for the year. And he wasn't sure if he should do it. And his mom said, you know, when, this is the best, when a parent says, do whatever you feel is right. So like, it almost would be easier if mom said, don't do it, or do it, you know, but do whatever you feel is right. And he knows his mom would love to have him home. Every mom would love to have their kid home. My son's in Shalavim this year. My wife would love to have him home. But you know, she knows that it's best for him to be in Shalavim. So he came over to me and he said that he had asked his 11th grade Rebbe, who is Rabbi Moshe Benovitz, who runs the NCSY Summer Kollel. He asked him what to do. And Rabbi Benovitz said to him, this is not a question for me. This is a question for a gadol. So someone should get you in touch with a gadol. So he came over to me to ask me to get him in touch with a gadol, to get him in touch with Rav Schechter. He said, if he, you know, you have a connection with Rav Herschel Schechter from Yeshiva University, can you get me in touch with him? So I said, sure. So I was driving Rav Schechter to a shir that night somewhere, and I told Rav Schechter this story. I said, we got a this kid would like to talk to you. So Rav Schechter said, oh, okay. He takes out his calendar. He says, what's his bedtime? When's his bedtime? I'm like, he's a 12th grader. I don't think he has a bedtime. So he said, oh, okay. So next Mosai Shabbos at 11:30 at night, I have a free slot in my schedule. So I said, how about we just call him from the car? He's like, oh, okay, that would work too. So I'll never forget this. We called Rav Schechter from the car. The kid wasn't expecting the call. So I said, I had it on speaker, because, you know, hands-free, I'm not going to... So I said, David, I have Rav Schechter here in the car with me. And David didn't realize it was on speaker, so David said, oh my God, I better put a shirt on! That was his response. So David put a shirt on, and he had a discussion with Rav Schechter back home. And one of the things Rav Schechter told him is that the requirement of Kibbutz Ave'im is anything that will help to serve your parents is certainly within the realm of the requirement of Kibbutz Ave'im. But anything that's going to be... The Gemara discusses Mishal Ben, that's going to cost you emotionally. It's going to cost you in a big way in terms of your own emotional well-being or your own financial well-being. That you don't have to do. That's not within Kibbutz Ave'im. Your time, your energy, all of that, absolutely. Your parent says, I need you to go shopping for me, I need you to do this for me, and all of that, for sure. I need this act of service. Oh, but it's beneath me, you know, you're going to grow up, you're going to be a very important doctor or whatever that you're going to be. And you're going to be I'm such an important person, I get it. Doesn't matter. You're not a more important person than your parents, ever. But when it's going to set you back as a person, that parents do not have control over. I once gave a shiur entitled, Kibbutz Ave'im always applies, except. So like there are a few exceptions. Anyone know any exceptions, like any specific examples when one does not have to listen to a parent? There's a much celebrated comment, a well-known halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that if a parent tells you, don't marry this person. Someone you fall in love, you want to marry that person, parent tells you, don't marry this person, you do not have to listen. Now, generally speaking, I find that when my students tell me, my parents have a problem, they told me not to marry this person, I find that it's worth listening to why they are saying that, because very often they have a child's best interest at heart. But why does that halacha exist? Because if that is how you envision your life going, and that is the person that's going to make you happy, and that you're going to be able to build a home that's going to serve Hashem together with, the parent doesn't have the right to hold you back from that. So a parent does not have the right to ask you to do something that will mess you up socially. So I thought in this case, for you know, if my mother would tell me, she should live to 120, but if she were to ever tell me, after 120, I would like you to wear a green shirt when you say Kaddish for me. I'll wear whatever color shirt. I don't care. She picks my clothes anyway. You know, it's fine. Whatever she wants. It's fine. You know, but for this guy, the black hat wasn't just, you know, wear whatever. To this guy, the black hat was a symbol of everything that went wrong in his life and may cause him a tremendous amount of stress and trauma, aside from the fact that it will look really funny with his jeans and t-shirt. But, you know, leaving that aside. But is there any other issue outside of Kippur Aveim? Anything else that would require him to listen to his mother? Is there something unique about the context of this request? When did this request come in his mother's life? What?
On her deathbed.
On her deathbed. So that might change things for two reasons. First of all, when is he going to be fulfilling the request? After she's dead. Is there a mitzvah to honor a parent after they're dead? What do you think? Mitzvah to honor a parent after they're dead? Well, certainly the classic honor you would give to a parent, the Gemara gives the example, get me a drink, you got to get them a drink. Get me? So you don't do that for a dead parent. That would be strange. Right? But is there a mitzvah to honor the parent after the dead? You know what the Gemara says? You honor them when they're alive, you honor them after they're dead. But it changes. It's different. An act of service, when they're alive, you do acts of service to them. La'achramoso, you speak about them in reverential terms. You speak about them in a way that shows that you have tremendous respect for them. You say things like Hareini Kaparas Mishkava, you say things like Zechrono Levracha, you say things that are reverential about them. But there is a mitzvah after they're dead. Is this going to be better for the parent? Meaning in Olam Haba, if the child is wearing a hat, is that Kaddish going to be better for the parent than if the child's not wearing a hat? Yes, right? So I actually asked, I wanted to see what different people would say. So I actually asked a few different types of people. Now, most of the people that I asked, most of my rebbeim said, oh my gosh, this mother is so stupid. Meaning, that is such a bad idea. I mean, doesn't she realize? And the answer is she's not so stupid. She didn't realize because her child always protected her from what he had become. She never knew that he wasn't religious. I know because she used to call me all the time to check on him. How's he doing? She would like make parent-teacher conference calls for her 40-year-old son to the shul rabbi. You ever get this? You ever get that? So she would check in on him. And I know she had no idea. She said, oh no, he's always been Shomer Shabbos. He's always been Shomer Shabbos. I think like, that's definitely not true. You know, he's always kept kosher. He would never... That's definitely like things that I knew weren't true. He protected her from all this information. So she just didn't understand. Why can't he just dress like the rest of the family? Like, you know, just when he would come to their house in Brooklyn, he looked different than all the other siblings. Why can't he just try to fit in with everybody else and be like the rest of the family? She didn't really understand. But I also asked the Haredi Gadol. I asked someone from the very right-wing world in Israel, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, who is the son-in-law of Rav Eliashiv. And he said, of course mommy knows best. And mommy knows what's going to be best for him. And she obviously wants his best interest. So he should do what mommy knows. What mommy understands. He said, clearly, mommy understands that when he dresses a certain way, it's going to cause him to behave in a certain way. Because it would be embarrassing for someone who dresses in a certain way to do things that would be beneath a person who normally dresses in that way. So clearly she's trying to put him on a path where it's going to change his behavior, where clothing changes our behavior. Now, that's partially true. Clothing does change our behavior, right? You ever get dressed, you know, for like a wedding or something, or for some fancy event, and you're wearing like your nicest clothes? Like, you feel different. It's not just, even if you're not looking in the mirror, you feel different. Your clothing definitely affects you. I just would disagree with how this clothing would affect him in this case. But clothing definitely has has an effect on you. You know, when you're having a lazy day and you're just hanging out in sweats all day, it feels different than when you're in school clothing. There's a reason that schools require a certain type of dress. You know, my nephew's in Boca Raton. They're only allowed to wear shorts all day. I don't know if the schools have they only wear shorts to school all day. But like, we don't do that in New York. You know, it puts you in a certain frame of mind. So I think as far as honoring the mother, even after death, I think this would not be included in that requirement. But last thing, what about a dying request of a person? Does that take on extra importance? Because it's a dying request of a person. So there is a concept in Chazal called mitzvah l'kayem divrei ames. That when someone is dying, you have to fulfill their request. So when you just take that phrase, mitzvah l'kayem divrei ames, those four words, it makes it sound like he's going to have to listen. Because this isn't just about kibud avim. This is about a dying request of a person. Mitzvah l'kayem divrei ames. But if you look at every place in Shas where mitzvah l'kayem divrei ames comes up, in every single place, it relates to someone trying to channel where their money goes after they die. It always has something to do with their property, their money, what's going to be. In fact, there's a famous Gemara, probably many of you are aware of, in Maseches Tainis. The Gemara tells the story of Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan. You know the story of Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan? They were chavrusas in yeshiva. They were both fantastic superstars in yeshiva. They were going to be like the next big thing. The only thing is they had no food, they had no money, they needed to go out to work to make a living. So they were going out to work to make a living, they were leaving the yeshiva, and they parked themselves to eat lunch next to this wall, this dilapidated building that could have caved in at any time. I don't know if they didn't notice that it was a dilapidated building, they didn't realize how dangerous it was, but they're sitting there eating their lunch next to this building, and Rabbi Yochanan hears two angels talking to each other. And one angel says, hey, let's kill these two guys because they're leaving yeshiva. And the other angel says, no, one of them is about to become someone very important, so let's not kill them. So Rabbi Yochanan turns to Ilfa after hearing this conversation and he says, Ilfa, did you just hear something? And Ilfa says, no, I didn't hear anything. So Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, okay, good, have a nice day. And Rabbi Yochanan goes back to yeshiva. And he figures it must be me that's about to become, you know, the next big gadol or something. So Rabbi Yochanan goes back to yeshiva, Ilfa goes out to work, and Rabbi Yochanan becomes the Rosh Yeshiva. And by the time Ilfa comes back, Rabbi Yochanan is the Rosh Yeshiva, and people are making fun of Ilfa. Oh, you were bigger than Rabbi Yochanan. If you would have stayed and learned, Rabbi Yochanan never would have been the Rosh Yeshiva. You would have been the Rosh Yeshiva. And Ilfa felt very insulted. So he wanted to show that even though he was making money, he did not give up on his Torah even a single bit. He was working super hard in learning, and he continued to grow in Torah. And the way he showed that is he climbed up to the top of a sailboat, very, very high up, and he said, anyone bring me any brisa in all of Shas. And if I can't show you the Mishnah that it comes from, the Mishnah that brisa is based on, I'm going to plunge to my death right now. So what would you say if a guy like makes an offer like that? Like, dude, it's okay. Just like, you know, come down, all right? Just, we can talk about this, okay? Like, you know, right? People start challenging him. Like, oh yeah? What about this one? And the first, the Gemara only gives one example. Someone gives a brisa about, a guy is dying, and he says, I want this amount of money to go to my son, but he doesn't say, I don't want more than this amount of money to go to my son. So you give X amount, not Y amount of money. Where's that in the Mishnah? And you know what Ilfa says? Mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. And in every example in Shas, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames is always about money. So I spoke to Rav Asher Weiss, Shlita, one of the great poskim of our generation. I asked him what he thought about this topic, whether mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames applies. He says, no, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames doesn't apply to wearing a black hat. It applies to money. This is not at all a mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames issue. So is there any reason to tell this guy to wear the hat? Why would I hesitate to even just say, forget about it, it's just not within any reason to tell to wear a hat? So one thing that kept on coming back in my mind is that I don't know if he was as difficult as it would be for him to live with wearing the hat, it may be equally difficult for him to live with the knowledge that he didn't listen to his mother's dying request. And that's a challenge. You know, this is why halacha is complicated, because it's not always halacha. Sometimes it's not always black and white. There's emotion involved. And by the way, what did he say to his mom when she said that? When she made that request? He had to respond. Were you allowed to lie? Make her feel good? She's dying. Can you lie? That's a whole separate shiur. That's a whole separate question. It happens to be at the end of the day, he changed the topic when she said it. You know, it's like, oh, look, a bird. You know, like he did something to change the topic. And he ended up not wearing a hat, but he said Kaddish for the full year, and he did everything, and he continues to grow as a Jew, and to learn Torah, and to honor his mother's memory in ways that probably, being where she is now, she appreciates even more than the value of what she had requested. I want to thank you all for coming to learn on a snow day. Enjoy the rest of your day. If any of you have
any questions, if anybody has any questions, feel free to ask away. You've been very quiet, but
have a wonderful day.